So a good morning again for those that just joined us. What I'd like to speak about today is an issue that I admit is going to be a bit controversial for some, but very common on the other hand, and therefore I feel that it's very important to deal with it. And that's the issue you see on the screen, saving a seat for someone in shul. You know the scene, you come in Shabbos morning, you want to sit down and someone put their talis zekel on the seat and says, no, I'm saving it for my son. And then about an hour later, into davening, you look, did the son come? No. So meanwhile, about five people have asked for that chair, and this gentleman is saving it for his son, or daughter, or whatever it might be, or a friend. You all know the very famous, famous questionnaire that shuls give out before Rosh Hashanah. Does everyone know the questionnaire or not? Where do you want to sit? You want to sit next to a doctor or a lawyer? You want to sit in the back? You want to sit in the front? Which part of the shul?
How many seats do you need?
How many seats do you need is wonderful. But that's Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. However, throughout the year, we come into shul, and many times someone says, I'm saving the seat. Now, sometimes there's other seats in the shul, so you're inconvenienced. But I would say slightly offended. What happens if there's no seats in the shul? And the gentleman says, I'm saving the seat for my son. I'm saving the seat for my daughter. Is that mutter? Is it permissible or not? Now, when you deal with this question, there's three things you have to deal with. Number one, a general question in Choshen Mishpat. Is there any sort of an idea that when you get on a bus and you want to save a seat for someone, you're allowed to do that? It doesn't belong to you per se. On the other hand, maybe you do have some claim to it. That's the general question. Number two, beyond the general question in terms of laws of monetary laws of Judaism, we have to ask about the specific question. Is there a notion of ownership over a seat in shul? Maybe for that minyan, maybe not at all. And number three, Bruce, beyond the monetary general question and beyond the specific shul question, we have to now deal with the Menschlichkeit question. What's the human thing to do when someone comes into shul and wants to sit next to you and you're saving the seat, quote unquote, for someone? So that's what we're going to deal with today. Those three questions. The general, the specific, and the Menschlichkeit. Okay? Hey, Bruce, you have a question. We'll get to it. So we'll get to it. We'll get to it. We're going to go slow. We'll start with the general, and then we'll get to the rules that people have, okay? One of the things, Bruce, I don't like when people are answering questions is that they cut to the chase. In other words, I don't appreciate that when I ask a question, someone just cuts to the chase. The policy should be 15 minutes, this and that. I said, well, I'm asking, is it mutter? Is it usser? And you know, cut to the chase. That's it. You know, there's a policy. Don't ask questions. It's like what we just discussed about minhagim. You know, there must be a source somewhere for that policy, if you know what I mean. So let's see. Let's go slow and we'll get there, okay? So let's begin with your permission. The first thing I think we have to deal with is the general question. The general question of you get on a bus, you're saving a seat for someone. Is that mutter or not? Is there no notion of it or not? It's not something that belongs to you, like your bike, your car. But ultimately, it's a seat that anyone can sit down to, potentially, like on a bus. Is it mutter or not? So let's look at two Shulchan Aruchs that seem to contradict each other. The Shulchan Aruch on the right side of the screen says, and I quote, Halo v'shechayav l'shnayim o'yoter v'en lo kadeh lifroa l'chulam v'chadam adam echad. What is this talking about? Translating for Chinese, if I may. If I owe money to two people. I owe money to two people. And one day, my phone is sitting on a chair in shul. So, a very nice gentleman takes my phone, gives it to one of the two people that I owe money to, and says, here, this is in lieu of the debt. Right? Is that mutter? Says the Shulchan Aruch, no. Because you're giving the phone, which is worth 2,000 shekel, which, by golly, happens to be exactly what you owe that guy. You're giving him the phone, but due respect, he also owes the other guy 2,000 shekel. So why should guy number one get it? Maybe guy number two should get it. Maybe they should split it. As long as there's a situation where two people can potentially get that phone, you can't give it to one and not the other. Okay? Not getting into that in and of itself. Anyone that learned Bava Metzia knows that sugya right at the beginning, Daf Yud Amud Bet. The bottom line is, if I come into shul and there's a seat, and the seat potentially can go to me or can go to someone else. If I sit there, that's fine. But the seat next to me, if I'm saving it for someone, then that someone will get the chair. That's statement number one. What's statement number two? Other side of the coin. Someone else won't get the chair. So if I can take an example, I'm saving the chair for Harold. I want to sit next to a Kohen, right? But at the same time that I'm saving the seat for Harold, Avi comes into shul. And Avi says, I want to sit there. I say, no, I'm saving it to Harold. Harold has a right to sit there. Yes, he does. Meanwhile, by me saving the seat for Harold, who's not getting the seat? Avi. So therefore, you can't do that. You can't take it for one at the expense of another. On the other hand, the same Shulchan Aruch in a different Simon in Choshen Mishpat, not Simon Kufhei, but Simon Reis Samichtet, says as follows, HaMakbiya Mitzia Lechaveiro, Afal Pisha Lo Amar Lo Klum, Zachaba, says the Shulchan Aruch, if I pick up a lost object, now what is a lost object? A lost object that you do not have to return for whatever reason, namely, let's just say a 10 shekel coin. I pick it up. I can say I'm picking it up on behalf of Tzvi. I want to donate to the Shalom Zachar of his grandson this week. I am picking up the 10 shekel on behalf of Tzvi's chickpeas at the Shalom Zachar. Can I do that? After all, there's about 1 million other people that could potentially get that 10 shekel. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you can. So this is a contradiction.
It's not the same kind of case. Here you're stoker for somebody something, and there you're stopping somebody from having something.
Correct. Harold says, wait a minute, it's not the same thing. In a case of the 10 shekel coin, yes, a million people could potentially get it, but you happen to be there. Versus the first case where there's only two people in the world that could potentially get that phone, and yet you decide to give it to one and not to the other. So it's different, and indeed, there's two deot in Rishonim how to explain this contradiction. The first deot is the Tosfos. The Tosfos, as you all know, his job in life, his job description was that if he's learning Gemara number one, he has to make sure that it reconciles with Gemara number two. Correct? That's what Tosfos basically does. When he comes to learn Gemara number one, he comes with four volumes of the Shas, and he says, how does this fit in with the rest? So he says, hey, I know the two sugyas. This is a contradiction. So he said a little different than Harold, and he says the following, Deshani Gabe Mitzia. In a case of the 10 shekel coin found on the street, that's different. Why? The Ikola Meimar, because you could say, Migo Dezache Lenafshe Zachinama Lechavre. You could say, hey, just like I can pick up the coin myself and put it in my pocket, I can decide I'm picking it up on behalf of Tzvi. That's not the case of the cell phone. The cell phone, I can't pick up the cell phone for myself. What do you mean? That's stealing. That cell phone potentially could go to one of the two people I owe money to, but not to the other million people in the world. Therefore, it's different. Namely, it's not a case where potentially I can take it into my own pocket. Plugging this into our shul case, I could take a seat for myself. But I decide, no, I don't want to take it for myself. I want to save it for Harold. Well, that would only be the case when, not me saving a seat for someone else, but rather me giving up my own seat. Namely, I could sit there because I got to shul on time, or I decided I don't want to sit there. I want to give it to Harold. But it's not a case in which I could ultimately say, oh, I'm sitting down comfortably, but the seat next to me, that I can give, I want to give to someone. However, unlike the Tosfos, the Ramban has a different way of explaining the difference between these two cases. What does the Ramban say? Once again, to reiterate, two cases. A coin on the street, anyone can potentially pick it up. I pick it up on behalf of someone, it belongs to that someone. Second case, I owe money to just two people. Someone found my wallet and gives the entire wallet to one and not the other. In the former case, it's his. In the latter case, it's not, because he owes money to two people. How do you explain this contradiction? The Ramban has a different way of explaining it than the Tosfos. Yes, Bruce?
Does it matter if you're the first time in shul and second? There's 100 other seats that are wide open. You have to save the seat.
We'll get to it, Bruce. We'll get to it. Very good. You're already thinking ahead. Great. Beautiful. Says the Ramban, Mishum de eino chav la'achirim hu, kevan de lo zachah ba'adam, lav chovahi lo im eino motza'a. Bottom line is, the coin on the street belongs to nobody. Namely, nobody has more of a claim on it than someone else, so I can give it to whoever I'd like. Aval gabei bal chov, kevan shu chayav lo, v'nichsayu einan arvin bei, mi shemotzein merushito v'shiyebudo chav hu lo. The difference is very simple. It's not like the Tosfos says, oh, I can give it to myself. I decided to give it to someone else. I'm a nice guy. Says the Ramban, it's very different. In the case of the cell phone on the chair or the wallet of the gentleman, the minute I give it to one, someone else is losing from it. Correct? Because someone else has a lien on it. That's not the case in the case of the coin. The coin belongs to no one. Namely, by me giving it to Tzvi, I'm not making someone else lose money. They never saw the coin. They never had any lien on the coin. They never had any claim on the coin. Right? Very much like Hilchos Chol HaMoed. People make a mistake in Hilchos Chol HaMoed, and anything that moves, they say it's Dabar HaAved. You know, you wake up in the morning, can I go to the makolet to buy food? Dabar HaAved. Right? Can I go to the mall to the sale? Oh, it's Dabar HaAved. There's a sale. Right? There's a big difference in halacha between two things. Dabar HaAved and Miniyat HaRevach. Can anyone explain the difference? What's Dabar HaAved?
Dabar HaAved would be something that you have and will lose.
Tzvi says correctly. It's something you have and you will lose. You have a job. If you don't go in Chol HaMoed, you will not get paid for what you usually have every month. That's Dabar HaAved. What's Miniyat HaRevach? Simple. I don't have a yellow shirt. I have a blue shirt. Right? I don't have a yellow shirt yet. I all of a sudden wake up on Chol HaMoed. There's a sale. So I'm going to go to the Kanyon. I'm going to go to the mall in Yerushalayim for the sale to buy that yellow shirt that I don't yet have. First of all, you have to be a moron to the second power to go into the mall on Chol HaMoed. Can anyone explain why you have to be a moron to the second power to go into the mall on Chol HaMoed?
A little crowded.
A little crowded, says he. Harold is someone that speaks carefully. See, I speak cynically. He speaks carefully. It's a little crowded, okay? Abyssally crowded. That's exactly the reason why you don't want to go. But there's a second reason why you don't want to go. Because it's not Dabar HaAved. Dabar HaAved means I have something. I'm going to lose it. Here you don't have it yet. That's Miniyat HaRevach, okay? By the way, I'll just say in parentheses, one of the shilas I once got on Chol HaMoed was, there's a sale, I'm in this and this place, can I go to the sale? So I said, it seems like Miniyat HaRevach and not Dabar HaAved. She said, the lady said to me, it is Dabar HaAved. I said, why? Well, if I go today, my mom will come with me and she'll pay. If I go next week, I'm going to pay. So that might be Davara Aved. She was right in that particular situation. Close the parenthesis, says the Ramban. When the money potentially is supposed to go to two people, by giving it to one, you're making the other one lose. Not the case with a lost object. The lost object belongs to no one. It's ownerless. Okay? It's like a field this year of Shemitah. If I go in and take a little nana from your field, then ultimately it's not that, oh, if I take it, I'm making you lose. What do you mean? You have no claim on it whatsoever. Plugging this into our case, very simply, there's a chair in shul. The chair in shul now belongs to nobody. Nobody. I decide I want to give it to X. Sounds okay? Sounds okay to me? If indeed the chair potentially only two people can sit on and I give it to one and not the other, that would be a problem. But that's not the case in our shuls. So we have a fascinating machloket between the Tosfos and the Ramban. According to the Tosfos, there's no way in shul you can give the seat to one and not the other, because quite frankly, the only way you could do it is give up your own chair. Not according to the Ramban. Just to see it clearly on the next screen, here we go. If there are others in the shul, there are other seats available, what will the Ramban say? He'll say, saving this seat is not at the expense of others. You come into shul, you want to sit here. Says the father, I'm saving it for my son. But there's 25 other seats. So by me saving it for my son, I'm not making anyone else lose. You could sit somewhere else. According to the Tosfos, not. You have to give him your seat. But in the case where there are no other seats available, and by saving it for your son, you're going to make this person stand, then what will the Tosfos say? Absolutely not. It's at the expense of others. What would the Ramban say? It's not at the expense of others. It's ownerless. So I decide I'm giving it to this and this person. So it's a machlokas between the Tosfos and the Ramban. If you can save a seat in shul for someone, according to the Ramban, no one has more of a claim on it than someone else. So therefore you can give it to whoever you want. And if you want to save it, you save it. According to Tosfos, no. You have to, the only way, the only mechanism that works is, if I can give it to myself, I can decide to give it to others, like the 10 shekel coin. But not the case if I ultimately am going to take that seat at the expense of others. And therefore, says the Tosfos, I can give him my chair, saying, oh, I'm saving this seat for my son, but you can take my chair. But I can't go ahead and sit on my chair and say, oh, I'm saving this seat for my son. Now, the only problem with what I just said is that there's another Shulchan Aruch that says all of this is in a case in which you pay for the seats. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that with Metaltalim, if you pay, that would be the case. So if it was a bus where everyone pays for a seat, then I would have understood that this is the Machlokas. Can you save a seat? According to Ramban, yes. According to Tosfos, no. But in the Shul, or let's say at a bar mitzvah you happen to come to in a different hall, there I'm not so sure that the case is that someone paid for it, and therefore because they didn't pay for it per se, it could very well be that this whole razzle-dazzle shiur up until now is not relevant. So that's my only little hitlaptut, my only little deliberation about what we said, but just to reiterate, if indeed giving the seat to one is at the expense of someone else, namely, there's no other seats in the shul, then the Tosfot would say no, and the Ramban would say, yeah, because I decided to give it to him. No one has more of a claim on it than someone else. Okay? That's with regard to the general issue. Now, let's get to shuls. I have an old saying. When people come into shuls, it brings out the worst in people. Why? Because outside, people know where they stand. Let's say you work in an office. There's a president, a vice president, the chairman of a board, your supervisor, or whatnot. You know where you stand. You know you can tell him what to do, and you can't tell him what to do. When you come into a shul, you come in, as Jackie Mason, Zichrona Levracha, used to say about a Jew coming into a restaurant. A Jew comes in and says, hello, I'm here, and he starts complaining about everything that works. saying about I want this chair and not that chair because he feels he's the boss. He's paying, he's the boss. Now, what happens in shuls? You come in, everyone feels they're the president. They can tell people what to do, and if you don't listen to me, I'm leaving. Right? So, unfortunately, shuls can bring out the worst in people. I have another saying, shuls can bring out the best in people. People can come into shuls and ultimately climb to high spiritual levels. And it's really, in my opinion, up to us and the people that run the shuls to decide which one of the two it's going to be. Now, we dealt with the general issue of monetary laws. If I take someone and take something and it's at the expense of others, can I do that? Now, how does that play out in a shul? Does the chair belong to anyone? What do you guys say? Does it belong to anyone? Say again, Svi?
It depends.
Depends on what?
On whether the shul happened to sell places or not. Whether the places are marked or not.
So Svi says, it depends if that shul sells, sells the seats or not. If they sell the seats and it's yours, then it's yours. And if they don't, they don't. That's what it depends on.
What about if they sell them with a caveat, with a limitation? Like Bruce mentioned earlier. You have a seat that's yours.
Same idea. It just has a limitation on it. It's Mechira al Tanai. Absolutely. So that's the first thing we says Tzvi, it depends on. Okay, anyone else? Let's add something to it. Does anyone know what Makom Kavua means?
Yes.
Does anyone know where we learn that you're supposed to have a Makom Kavua to daven?
Yes.
Last week's Parsha, gentlemen. You got it, Tzvi. Vayakom Avraham Baboker, Elamakom Asher Amat Sham Lifnei Hashem. From here, the Gemara learns that he went back to daven in the same place that he stood yesterday. He pleaded for Sdom yesterday. The next morning, he went back to the same place. From here, we learn that there's a notion of Makom Kavua. So beyond the issue of, they sold me my seat and I paid for it, the second issue is going to be, you're supposed to daven in the same place. So I walk into shul, someone's sitting in my place. Hey, I'm supposed to daven in my place. Get out of my place. You go daven somewhere else if you're a guest. You don't have a makom kavua here in the shul. I do. So there's two issues that can come into play in shul. Number one, what's the policy regarding seats? Monetary policy. And number two, makom kavua. So let's see how that plays out in a shul. So now we're going into shul. Let's see what the poskim say about shul. Says the Shulchan Aruch on the top of the page, Ein Adam Yachol Le'esor Chilko Mi Beit HaKneset Ve'lo Mi HaSfarim Im Asar Eino Klum. So I have a Makom in Shul. It says my name in it. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that's meaningless. Meaningless. You can't say, if I'm not there, no one can sit there. Anyone can sit in any chair in Shul. That's what the Shulchan Aruch Paskin says, the Magen Avraham, Rav Avraham Gumbiner, one of the Perushim on the Shulchan Aruch from the 17th century, says the Magen Avraham, that is a very interesting issue that comes up a lot. Imaya petach betzad echad vecharva bet hakneset. You walked into shul, you sat right by the door. Why did you sit right by the door, Arthur? You're smiling. Come on. We're between friends. Ah, so you can get out first. And that, you paid a lot of money. You wanted that chair. Then, Charva, the shul burnt down, lo aleinu. Okay? You live in Lod. You live in Yafo. And lo aleinu, the Arabs, may they rot, went ahead and burnt down the shul. They're in jail, but right now you got to build a new shul, so they build a new shul. Now, what happens? You come into the new shul, there's a Chanukah Tabayit, everyone's dressed beautifully, they invite all the Rabbanim, everyone comes in, the only person that's not smiling is Arthur. Why is Arthur not smiling? Not because his etrog wasn't yellow this year, but they moved him. It used to be he sat here, and there was the door. Now the door's over there. So he's sitting in the same place. But the door has moved. No longer is his seat the preferred seat. You know, different planes have different formations. You have two flights. They give you seat 17A. On the first flight, that's a aisle seat by the door. What do we call that? A preferred seat. On the first plane, you got the aisle seat, and it's by the door. There's no one in front of you. You can stretch out your legs. I haven't traveled in so long. What is that seat called? There's a name for it. What? The bulkhead? No, there's another. The bulkhead, I know what that is. This is exit. Thank you. The exit seat. The exit seat where they ask you, are you willing in a case of an emergency to help out? And because you're a religious Jew, you better say yes. Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa. Isidoraisa, but suffice it to say, even if you're not a religious Jew, you're going to say yes, because for stretching out your legs, you're willing to help people. Am I right, Arthur? So on the first seat, on the first plane, that's a great seat. Then on your connecting flight, 17A, is some seat in the back. You're sitting in front of two kids, right? You can barely get your legs in there, and ultimately try to sleep. It's not going to work. You know, every time you put your legs out, you fall. Every time you put your legs up, you can't fall asleep. And everything doesn't work out. Same seat, 17A, no difference. The only difference is the plane's changed. So says the Magen Avraham, this happened in our shul. Here, I'm living in Poland and Lithuania. Same seat, 17A. In the first shul, it was by the door, preferred seat. Then the shul burnt down. They built a new shul. And ultimately, what happened? Same seat, but it's no longer by the door, says the Magen Avraham. Ein acherin yecholim limchot. Due respect, it's not yours. Seats in shul don't belong to you. Finished. Afal pishahem arav, apisham shanim sedar yeshiva. All right. So I guess that's the end of the shir, right? Shul seats don't belong to you. So finished. Anyone can sit anywhere they want. No one can say to you, hey, that's my seat. Hey, I'm saving the seat. Doesn't exist. Comes along the Chafetz Chaim, 20th century, and says, by us in Radin, we have this new idea. Shuls have to make money. So what did they do in Radin? A new idea. You know, things change. Hygiene changes, nutrition changes. Here is the change of our particular situation. Rabbi Lewis says the Chafetz Chaim, Lechaara ze dafka belo ayalo makom kavua. Ela mitzadche bet hakneset mishutaf lekulam. You know, you go into the shtiblach in Katamon. You ever been to the shtiblach in Katamon? You know, one of my dreams that probably will never come true is I should live across the street from the shtiblach in Katamon. You know, you wake up in the morning anytime you want. You never need an alarm clock outside of Zman Kriyat Shema. And you walk into shul. As soon as you get there, you got yourself a minyan. Shachris, Mincha, Ma'ariv. It would be a dream come true. I know people living there that eventually got married. They can't afford living in Katamon, like the majority of the Jewish people. So they live in new places like in Efrat, and they suffer terribly. They say, I have to set an alarm clock to go to Minyan. I never did that in my life. So says the Chafetz Chaim in the Shtiblach in Katamon, there's no Makom Kavua. That's a shul where it really depends when you get there and which of the five rooms you're davening in. Correct? Anyone ever been there? You know what it's like? Right? You walk up, you walk into the courtyard, there's people selling stuff in the courtyard, always. Right? Before Sukkot, they're selling Lulav and Esrogs. And then before Hashana Rabbah, they're selling Hoshanos. And then during the year, they're selling Kippahs. There's always some. Then you go up the steps. There's a room on the left. There's a room on the right. There's a room in front of you. There's a room on the side of you. And then, if that's not enough, outside, there's about five minyanim. So, then there's no Makom Kavua. What, are you kidding me? There is one seat in the Shtiblach I saw with a name on it. I thought that was a joke. But there is one gentleman that put his name on a seat in the Shtiblach. I happen to remember the name too. In any case, I don't know what that is. It might be a good joke. So that's indeed a shul that has like a Shtiblach. Right? I'm sure you've seen the sign in the Shtiblach. There's a plaque that says, no gabbai in the history of gabbais has ever known what temperature to put the air conditioner on. Therefore, do not complain. You never saw that sign? Okay, I have to send it. I'll send it to Bruce after Shir, and he'll send it to everyone. It's a plaque. It's not a sign. They actually made a plaque, namely, what are you, out of your mind? People come in, Stieblach. Ah, it's too cold. Okay, put it out. Ah, it's too hot. Impossible. It says the Chafetz Chaim of Al-Nafiyah Minhag, leaving the Stieblach and Katamon and coming to Efrat. Shekol echad kone makom kavua bebeit ha-Knesset. Ve'yesh lo bo zchut lo horish v'limkor. Efshar, de lo shayach ze. Ve'ayen. Says the Mishnah Berurah, maybe this whole takana of the Shulchan Aruch, which is a takana of Gaonim, by the way, doesn't apply in our shuls, because we do sell seats. When you, before Rosh Hashanah, pay your membership, you get a right to a seat more than other people who didn't. And therefore, indeed, maybe you can throw people out of your seat because you paid for it. It's a new world. On the other hand, the same Chafetz Chaim says, Achar kach batzati ba-me'iri. Now, why does the Chafetz Chaim say, afterwards I found in the Me'iri? Does anyone know why? I mean, if I write a book, I'll say, on the one hand, it says like this, and on the other hand, the Me'iri says like that. Why did he say achar kach, afterwards? Does anyone know why? Does anyone know why? Because first and foremost, the Chafetz Chaim Bruce was honest. He wanted to say, I finished writing, and I thought I was correct, and then I saw the Me'iri, so I have to write, maybe I'm incorrect. That shows the Chafetz Chaim was 100% honest. Number two, what does that also show you? This is how you can learn Jewish history through a word of halacha. What does that show you? I want to show you something. You see the bookshelf behind me? Harold, you see the bookshelf? Harold sees the bookshelf. There you go. Harold, I want you to look at the bookshelf. In the middle of it, I have a Rashba, I have a Shita Mekubetzet, and I have a set of Me'iris. So when I prepare a shir, what am I going to do? I'm going to go to the bookshelf. Or today, you don't go to the bookshelf. That's in the days of dinosaurs. You go to your computer, and you check. What does the Rashba say? What does the Me'iri say? What did that? What do you think the Chafetz Chaim had back in the olden days? You think he had a Me'iri in Radin? Everyone had their set of Me'iri at home. Are you out of your minds? The Me'iri was a rare, rare book. Okay? I know a Rosh Yeshiva in YU that was in the middle of a shir, and someone threw a Me'iri at him, and his answer was, we didn't have a Me'iri in Tells, and we're not learning the Me'iri here. Okay? You understand that today we have this abundance of books. It's wonderful. At our fingertips. I can finally understand Chazal. Ashrei mi shebalikan v'talmudo biyado. That tzvi was a ma'amar Chazal before it was a song. What does it mean? Ashrei mi shebalakan, blessed is who comes here, v'talmudo biyado, and he holds his Talmud in his hand. Very simple. You see this? You got the whole Talmud in here. You have all the Rishonim, you have all the Achronim, you have everything. I put on my phone, on my screen, right at the beginning here, there's a picture of the Chafetz Chaim. That's an app for the Mishnah Berurah. Okay? Somewhere else I have the Kahati Mishnayis. Somewhere else I have the entire Gemara translated. This is a wonderful world we live in today. What do you think the Chafetz Chaim had? He had maybe a set of Gemaras, a Shulchan Aruch. So then he finished his Perush, and someone came into Radin and gave him a Me'iri. He said, oh, so you know, Shabbos afternoon. And all of a sudden he says, the Me'iri from Baba Basra, Perek Ashutfin, says that Laharbe Poskim Bechol Gav Deinoi Cholesor. There's a Takan of Gaonim in Shul, no one has a Makom Kavua. So the Chafetz Chaim debates. If today, when we sell chairs, do you get an actual right to that chair or just to a chair? Now you understand, this would plug in to our question. If indeed you have a right to a chair, you come into shul, you could say, it's my chair. I bought three seats for Rosh Hashanah, three seats next to me. I want my sons to sit next to me. So they're my chairs. On the other hand, there could be a takana of Gaonim saying, in shuls, no such thing. There's a middle point of view. There's a middle point of view, and that's the nativos. Everyone learned in yeshivas, know what the nativos are? The ksos, the nativos. The nativos says something interesting. He says, the seat doesn't belong to you in terms of ownership, but you have a right to sit. I'll read his words. Shegufa karka uveita kneset ushel atzibur. Ve'en lekol echad rak sheyabud al yeshiva al hamakom. Says the nativos, you have a right to sit, albeit not necessarily there. Okay? So, plugging this into our machlokas. We said originally there's a machlokas, the Ramban and Tosvos, if indeed you can save a chair on behalf of others. Says the Ramban, no one has more of a right to that chair, so you can. Says the Tosvos, no, because you ultimately can give up your chair, but you can't save on behalf of someone else. My only caveat was maybe you don't pay for it. Now we come to the shul. There could be a takana that there's no such thing that chairs belong to anyone in shul. But it could very well be that today, since we pay for chairs in our shul, it does. So ultimately, the middle position of the nativos is interesting. You have a right to sit, albeit the gufa karka doesn't belong to you. Who disagrees with the nativos? The Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer, whose picture or alleged picture is here on the bottom, you understand no one took a selfie of the Chasam Sofer, but that's what he probably looked like, because in so many books, that's the picture. The Chasam Sofer has a very interesting question, and this is the question. Once again, the shul was rebuilt, and you want to sit in the same place, but they put, an exit there, and you want to sit there. Says the Chasam Sofer, you do have a right. You do have a right, says the Chasam Sofer. The Baalei Mekamot Bebeit HaKneset Ein Raksa Safsalim Shelahem Ki Ima Karka Kanui Lahem Lesafsalihem Uletzochei Beit HaKneset. It's not just the right to sit, it's the right to sit there. It's like you have the right to that Dalet Amot in Shul. 17a is yours, ownership-wise. Except for one called Dine de Bar Matzra. You're rebuilding a shul and you're putting an exit where I used to sit? That's Zela. It belongs to me. I paid for it. It's mine. You didn't buy it from me. You can't take it away from me. So, very interesting that within a shul, there's three points of view. One point of view is, there's no such thing as anything belonging to anyone in shul. Shul, by definition, is like the shtiblach. Anyone can sit anywhere. The second point of view is, if you buy a seat, it belongs to you. And maybe, according to the Chasam Sofer, real ownership, all the way. The middle point of view is the nativot that says it doesn't belong to you in terms of ownership. You have the right to sit. According to two out of the three points of view, you understand very well that in a shul that's your shul, where you paid for a seat, it could very well be you can go up to someone and say, excuse me, this is my chair, please move. Because I paid for it, it's mine. And even if I paid for it and it's not mine, I have a right to sit there according to the nativos. Okay? On the other hand, the third point of view would say, in shul, no such thing. Whoever comes in, first come, first serve. So, we dealt with this question up until now with two points of view in mind. The monetary issue, general, and the more specific issue in the shul.
What about members versus number?
Exactly enough, Kamina, Harold. Member means I paid for this seat or I paid for the right to sit. According to one point of view, a shul is ownerless by definition, and anyone can sit anywhere they want. That's the takana of Gaonim. According to the second point of view, you own the chair, you're a member, you have more of a right absolutely to sit down than anyone else. And according to the nativos, same thing. You paid membership, you have more of a right to sit down than anyone else. Tzvi.
Right.
100%. I actually debated on the same questions. Namely, when we sell chairs, we sell it anew every year. So is this real ownership? This is not, you're buying a chair forever, right? However, then I said to myself, you know, in shuls, at least in Israel, you have two kinds of members. You have the members that pay every year, and then you have the members that also pay Keren Binyan. For those that are listening in English, Keren Binyan in English means the building fund. The building fund means you're not only a member, you're like a lock and stock member. So there could very well be, if you paid for the building fund, then you have a right to a chair, and maybe the karka belongs to you. If you're just like a member every year, maybe you have a right to sit, but you're not the same. I debate it. It's a good point. It's a very good point. And the question is, when we sell chairs, are we selling just the chair? And we can move the chair wherever we want? Or no, we're selling the karka under the chair. Okay?
Or the chair, even the chair or the place, but not the karka.
Exactly. So those are the three points of view. One point of view says no such thing in shul. The second point of view is you get a right to sit, albeit not in that specific space. And the third is, you get a right to sit, and in that specific space, and if they want to build a new shul and they put a exit there, they got to now block off the exit because you have a right to the karka. Those are the three points of view. Now, we dealt with this issue up until now in terms of Choshen Mishpat and in terms of Orach Chaim. There's one more chelik of Shulchan Aruch we didn't deal with. Remember the beginning of the shir? I said we're going to deal with this from three points of view. Monetary, laws of shuls, and Menschlichkeit.
Where is that in the Shulchan Aruch?
Menschlichkeit is not in Orach Chaim, Yoredeya, or Choshen Mishpat, or Eben HaEzer, though in Yoredeya there are laws of interpersonal relationships. Kibud Av V'Em, Kvod HaRav, etc. Very important laws, by the way. Very important. Ben Adam LeChaveiro is part of it. But Menschlichkeit is what we call the fifth Chelek of Shulchan Aruch. Every rabbi has that fifth Chelek. But even the fifth Chelek today, we have literature on. So I'd like to quote two poskim that I don't believe anyone here can say, oh, they're my rabbeim. What do I want to mean? They're not modern Orthodox. Okay? They were asked a shaila. They answered a tshuva in a very charedi, quote-unquote, way. And you'll see the menschlichkeit in it. And here's the shaila, a very simple shaila. Whatever the law is, I have a makom kavua in shul. I walk into shul, five steps, make a right, that's where I sit. Come in Shabbos morning, a guest is sitting in my chair. A guest is sitting in my chair. Can I tell him, hey, there's a halacha of makom kavua, Avram Avinu, the Gemara learns from it amazing things, it's paskin, get out of my chair, go sit somewhere else. Or not. Now you understand, the guest didn't take your chair, Arthur, because he doesn't like you. He doesn't know you sit there. How come he doesn't know you sit there?
He's a guest.
Thank you. He's a guest. I wanted to see if you were listening. See, in the middle of a shir, whoever teaches always asks the simplest question to see if people are listening. He's a guest. He didn't have anything against Arthur. He didn't know. He walked into shul. There isn't a gabbai at the door that says, welcome to our shul. Wonderful to see you. We have seats for guests. Please sit here. No, he comes in, and ultimately, he doesn't know. In the shul that I ran back in Halifax, Nova Scotia, we had a policy on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The members got seats, and there was a big chart, and everyone sat in their seats. Across the street from my shul, there was a huge campus called Dalhousie University. Whoever's Canadian will say, oh, Choshev University. Whoever's not Canadian shakes their head and has no idea what I'm talking about. In any case, there you go. Tzvi, at least honest, didn't know what I was talking about. It's okay. Tzvi, most people don't know where Halifax is either. Make a long story short, we had a policy, big sign. I insisted that we print the sign, not a little tiny sign, big sign. Dear students, welcome to our synagogue. You are welcome to sit in rows, whatever it was, 94 to 96. Which are reserved for you. So people would not feel uncomfortable coming into shul and maybe sitting in a seat they shouldn't. That was what we did in our shul. Well, that's Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. What happens on a regular Shabbos, people come in, they're sitting in my chair, can I tell them, hey, get out of my chair. Now, I'm not talking about your shtender. You know the movable shtenders people bring into shul? I know Harold's shtender. How do I know Harold's shtender? Because it has a nice white parochet on it, right, Harold?
Yes.
So I know it's, I'm not talking about that. That's your shtender, you can move it, and no one should use it if you're in shul. Okay, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your chair, where you usually sit. Can you throw someone out of your seat? It's your makom kavua. Okay? Makom kavua is a halacha. New? Let's see what the poskim say. Rav Zilberstein. Rav Zilberstein is from, I don't know if he's a Talmud, but he's Talmidei Talmidim of the Chazon Ish, Bnei Brak. This is what he says in his book, Chashukei Chemet, and I quote, Yashir et mekomo laoreach, v'hu yitpalel shelo b'mkomo kavua. Go sit somewhere else, even though it's your makom kavua. Why? Mishum shenemar sham b'Rambam. It says regarding makom kavua in the Rambam, you should have a makom kavua. However, imayad dachuk v'ne'enas ein me'akvim. It's not ma'akev. Now, what's dachuk v'ne'enas? Dachuk v'ne'enas, I always thought meant, until I saw Rab Zilberstein, you come into shul late. You know, you come into shul late, and you want to say Shmoneh Esrei with the tzibur. So quick, you put on your talis tefillin, and you quick, you're skipping Psukei de Zimra, right? And you finally, by the time you catched up, you look at your chair, oh, someone sitting in my chair, or, oh, my chair is over there, they're starting Shmoneh Esrei, right? So you stop in Shmoneh Esrei somewhere else. Tells Rav Zilberstein, you know what else is dachuk v'ne'enas? You come into shul on time, but someone's sitting in your chair. I never thought that would be a dachuk v'ne'enas. Ve'lachein, ima makom ha'kavua tafus ha'yedei ho'reach, ha'rei ze ke'ilu dachuk v'ne'enas, he says. Me'achar v'kiyem chashash shema ye'alev. Says Rav Zilberstein, there's a chashash that the guest will lehei alev with an ayin. What does that mean?
Be insulted.
Insulted. Why would he be insulted? First of all, because shuls bring out the worst in people. People come into shul, they're ultra sensitive. Second of all, I came into shul, I don't know anyone, I sat down, the first thing someone says to me is, get out of my chair. First impressions count. Thirdly, it is offensive. It is offensive. Objectively, you tell someone, get up, get out, it's offensive. Vekach gam lashon ha-shulchan aruch. Yikva makom mitfilato. Shelo yishaneyu im lo letzorech. Is there a tzorech here? Is there a tzorech? The answer is yes. What's the tzorech?
Not to
insult someone. That's Rav Zilberstein, Bnei Brak. I said, maybe he's a Das Yachid. Turns out, no. There's a beautiful book called Hegyonei HaParasha by Rav Aryeh Wasserman. Here's his picture. Rav Aryeh Wasserman writes a book on Parsha, and he brings what I like, and that is the halachos in the Parsha. Now, this does not mean, Arthur, that he learns from Avram Avinu Hilchos Eruvei Tavshilin. You know those books, right? Where they take what the avot do, and they say, how does this fit in with a halacha that was enacted 25 centuries later? No. This is a book where there are halachos learned, and he deals with it, and he plugs it into the parsha somehow. You know how people do that, right? Right? I was once listening to a shir on Parshat Vayishlach. Can you rely on a non-Shomer Shabbos Jew's kashrus? Right? So the first thing he says is we have to plug it into the Parsha. How are we going to plug it into the Parsha? Here's how we're going to plug it into the Parsha. Reuven went and he took Dudaim from this field. Do you think Reuven would take Dudaim that were stolen? No, he was a tzaddik. Ah, this is our plug. Okay?
That's almost as good as how we know that Yaakov wore a yarmulke.
How do we know?
Yaakov.
Yeah, that's a great asmacht. That's not even asmacht. Gezeros hakatov. Gentlemen, you should know that indeed I still went to school where my Rabbeim said Moshe Rabbeinu chav gereden mit de Elbester in Yiddish. Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to God in Yiddish. How do we know? Because it says Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. What language do you think he spoke? English? English is a goyish sprach. It's a non-Jewish language. It must be. He spoke Yiddish. Okay. Hegyonei Parasha, wonderful sefer. Rav Aryeh Wasserman deals with this question very well, and he comes to the same exact conclusion. First, he says, try to daven within your Dalet Amo. That's also considered Makom Kavua, right? And then he says something very interesting. If I daven in shul every day with Tzvi and Arthur and Harold usually sits here, and I dafka sit in his chair, then you should throw me out of the chair, because you know Harold sits there. Not so with a guest. A guest doesn't know Harold sits there. So therefore, let him continue sitting there. So two poskim, not modern orthodox, saying not insulting someone is more important than makom kavua. The only one that says that makom kavua trumps not insulting is if it's a regular member of the shul that knows you sit there. But outside of that, no. Ultimately, the bottom line is, I will say that I always found it disheartening and wrong that when you come into shul, people will tell you, hey, that's my chair, move. Or, I'm saving a seat for my son, move. It might be mutter, but it might be usser. We dealt with, halachically, is it mutter or usser? Both generally, like on a bus, and specifically in a shul. But I think menschlichkeit wise, if someone's sitting in your chair, think. Always think. Schar mitzvah keneged hefseda. What do I gain? What do I lose? And I think you have more to lose than to gain. If you insult a Jew, that is a terrible thing. A terrible thing. Now, you can try to prevent it. Tzvi was a gabbai. He knows how he can prevent potential pitfalls and shuls. So indeed, one of the ideas that Rabbi Wasserman says is, Hatov biyoter shehagabayim yekablu et haruchim v'yidagu lahem lemakom yeshiva. Okay, that's a very nice idea. Have someone at the door. What did we call that back in the old country? Anyone remember?
An usher.
An usher is a chush of a position. Okay? Can I tell you a little story about an usher? I had a wonderful congregant. He should live and be well. His name is Joey. Joey, my congregant, sat and ate the su'udam of seket with me before Yom Kippur. And we had a meat meal. And after the meal, my wife serves cheesecake. What kind of cheesecake? Parva cheesecake. Joey, not Shomer Shabbos, looks at the cheesecake and gets very nervous. And he doesn't know what to say. You know, it looks like meat and milk in the same meal. It's Erev Yom Kippur. On the other hand, he's the rabbi. So he's looking at the cheesecake. He's looking at me. He's looking at the cheesecake. And finally, he spits out the following words. You ready for this, Arthur? Rabbi. I don't like to mix into people's private business, but I'm an usher this evening. I don't want to do a sin right beforehand. Gentlemen, if you ask me, it is disheartening, if not offensive, that when you walk into a shul, instead of being greeted at the door with an usher, and if there's no usher, just someone saying, get Shabbos, and you sit down, the first thing you're told is, no, I'm saving the seat for my son. You don't know how much that can totally reflect on the rest of davening. And ultimately, this happens a lot, and I don't think there's any excuse for it. If it's so important for you to daven in a specific space, then come on time. Come on time. The policy that Bruce mentioned earlier, namely, all right, the first 15 minutes, also not bad. Not a bad policy. But if that policy is not in place and there's no usher at the door, what is the big deal? Try to daven within your Dalet Amot, and if not available, here are the poskim that say, more important not to offend a Jew. It's just disheartening. It's not disheartening, it's even worse, it's offensive. The first thing you're told when you come in to pray to God, when you're trying to gain spirituality and elevate yourself is, get out of my chair. Okay? I think that it would not be a good idea. So we dealt with this question generally. We dealt with it in terms of Hilchot Beit HaKnesset. And finally, with regard to Menschlichkeit, and I believe that the Menschlichkeit issue should be, try to daven within your Dalet Amot, and if not possible, you see what trumps what. Yes, Bruce, you raised your hand. No worries. I wish everyone a very good day, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we will see each other next week.